It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus.
Magical!
Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. It is post round two of the Waste Management Open, and we've assembled the squad to break down everything we've seen thus far and look forward to the weekend. So let's bring in the team. On the line, I've got Greg Ducharme. Welcome, Greg. Happy Waste Management Week.
Here we go. It's Friday night. I'm excited. It's looking good so far.
It is looking good. And also I'd like to bring in from the scene, Mark Immelman, you are there in person. I can't wait to ask you about everything that's going on at TPC Scottsdale.
It's the Phoenix Open. If I use the term everything, well, you can pretty well rest assured that there's more than that happening at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. It's been manic out here, as you would imagine. Friday certainly warmed up, but all sorts of fun. It's one of the great spectacles on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, let's start with the spectacle. And the spectacle of all spectacles, from what I can tell, I can gather, is the 16th hole, what are they calling it? The Coliseum. It's got the stadium seating over there, Mark. Like, it seems crazy, watching it on TV, but like, kind of give us an idea of what it's like in person and if what we're seeing on TV is even close.
What you see on TV is pretty close, but the thing that I guess TV, you can hear the buzz of the people out there because, you know, they've got marshals, the Thunderbirds out there trying to keep people quiet, but that's just ceremonial really because the guys don't give a damn. I mean, the players are hitting and basically a situation where, it's like a football game really. Imagine a stadium of about 20,000 people and, you know, I'll be honest with you, it's fun to walk the entrance. There's a tunnel that goes from 15 sort of underneath those big skyboxes onto the tee, and you walk in there and there's this buzz and it's three stories high and you feel like you're honestly in the Colosseum back in, you know, the Roman gladiator days, and folks are looking down on you and I'll be honest, I mean, I was out there with a microphone on Wednesday, the pro-am day. And I was nervous holding a microphone, so I can imagine what it's like for the players holding a club. And you know, if you don't hit one on the green, they're going to boo you. I don't care who you are. I mean, it's like Bubba Watson, for argument's sake. First round, he misses the green. They boo him like he was public enemy number one. And then he walks down there and gives a whole bunch of swag out to people, and everyone's cheering for him. Then he makes a bogey, and they boo him again. So there's no favorites out there. You're going to draw the ire of folks if you had a bad shot. You're going to be, you know, the best guy in the world if you had a good shot or make a birdie. And so it's lots of fun. You know what it is. And I'll tell you this much, for wherever you are on the course, you can see the 16th and you can hear the 16th. And even on like number 3 or 4 or 5, which is the furthest part of the course away, you're aware of 16 and you're thinking of 16. And then when you get to 15, it's a hole that's always on your mind. And so it is truly, you know, one of the, I'm going to use the term great, one of the great holes in the game, just because of the environment and the emotional ringer that it takes you through as a player.
It really is something. And to your point that no one is immune from the boo, the wrath of the boos if you miss the green. I mean, they were a little nice to Jon Rahm, when he made bogey there coming down the stretch, but he was still hearing it a little bit. And if he can hear it, then anybody can hear it. Greg, you know, to me, the 16th hole, obviously one of the most unique, situations that we have on tour. This golf course in general, this tournament in general is so unique. There is that ambient noise, that constant buzz of just whatever's going on at 16. Like, how do these guys even – can you prepare for something like this? You only see it once a year.
Well, it's definitely something to look forward to, I would imagine. The cool thing about it is – and what's different than other environments that you get like this, like Ryder Cup or an event like that, is it's a little – it seems to be anyway a little bit lighthearted, right? Bubba misses a green and then he's giving out swag and – the notion can change very quickly. It's such a reactionary crowd. They're not, you almost don't get the sense that it's personal. It's a little bit lighthearted, and you kind of know, you go in with the expectation, if I miss the green, they're going to boo. They're going to cheer if I hit the green. I think you can walk your way through that. Whereas like a Ryder Cup environment is a little bit different. You feel like no matter what you do, if you're on the term foreign soil, one of my favorite terms, they're going to come after you no matter what, and they're never going to let you live it down. At Waste Management, it seems like they're going to let you live it down. You just have to do something great. So it's very easy to be forgiven out there. And I like that aspect because hey, it almost seems a little bit lighthearted.
Greg, the truth of it is most folks with respect to all the fans around 16 and 17, which is it's not as big, but it's getting bigger. They're going to forget it because they have a few beverages.
Yeah, that's a good point. Right?
They're not going to remember anything.
Exactly. They don't remember anything.
So that's basically where I go. It's like, it's a fun environment, and I think it would be really exciting as a player to go in there because while there's risk of getting booed or getting cheered, that's kind of a fun thing because it's not going to hurt too bad for too long. And all you got to do is give out something cool, right? You can plan some kind of celebration. It's a very unique experience. And I think the players are looking forward to it more than they fear it. Whereas like the 17th hole at TPC Sawgrass, that environment is one that's feared because your tournament is going to basically live and die on this one shot. Whereas you're just getting a crowd reaction in the other one.
Well, I've got to say this, you know, because our strokes gain buddy Kyle Porter isn't on the line. 16 at TPC Scottsdale in this event is where strokes gain metrics go to die. Because I don't care who you are. I was on 17th tower today. You can get in there. The hole was playing like 176 yards. And someone like a John Rahm hits a 9-iron straight over the back of the green because of adrenaline. So you can come in there swinging well. It proves that golf is the ultimate holistic game. There's emotions involved. There's the mental challenges involved. There's the physical challenge, obviously. And you will see folks get out of routine. You'll see folks hit shots there with short clubs that they ordinarily wouldn't just because of the environment. And that's, to me, what makes this hole great, even though it is like a little bit of a circus for most of the day.
I obviously enjoy 16, but I'm actually a bigger fan of 17, Mark, which to me is, you know, such a great little par four. It's got the risk reward aspect to it. You know, 1 yard left and you're up there in the drink. I think that is the way that a short par four should be, but I do want to get this because you were there, Mark. Is there a quiet side to this course? Because we saw the leader, J.B. Holmes, finish his round up on what was being described as the quiet side of the course. Do you think that's a benefit to kind of get away from the circus? You've got 9 holes to go. And does the quiet side exist?
Yeah, it does. Certainly holes 4, 5, 5, 5 and 6 tee are the furthest part away of the golf course. It's quiet out there and not a lot of folks will venture that far out. You know, 18 is very close, is obviously close to the clubhouse. 17 is right there. 16's there. 10, 9, all those holes around there. There's a big, big stand. I think it's in behind 6 green, which is also very close to, the par 5, the par 3 12th. But then once you get beyond that, it can get quiet just because there's not a lot of folks out there. But there's still the buzz of the event, you know, because the decibels out there are loud all of the time, and you can, it's like being outside of a football stadium. You know when a team scores. So there's that kind of thing. But I would say to JB's advantage, finishing on that backside today, or the front 9, he's back 9. It was an advantage because you're sort of away from the humdrum and you're away from the mania, but that front 9 does play harder than the back. So there's pros and cons to it, but certainly if you're in the far end of the golf course, like 3, 4, 5 and 6, it is a little quieter out there.
Interesting. All right. And Greg, we're going to get 200,000+ people, in Phoenix tomorrow that are going to be raucous and they're going to be waiting out there outside of 16 at 4 a.m. I expect a pretty, large crowd and a lot going on, tomorrow. What do you think?
No question about it. And that to kind of go back on your previous question here, if you're JB Holmes and you finished on the quiet side of the course today, I promise you one thing. Tomorrow, if you finish it before daylight, it's not going to be too quiet. And that's kind of the challenge, right? Do you get a little advantage here on Friday afternoon? Well, maybe it's an advantage on Friday, but you know you're going to face it on Saturday. It's not like you're really running away from this at any point during the tournament. So Saturday and Sunday, you're going to have to go through that crowd. And everybody does it on Saturday, right? There's no one finishing on the quiet side of the course on a normal day on Saturday. So I look for JB Holmes and Wyndham Clark and all the guys at the top of the leaderboard to really be dealing with heavy crowds throughout the day. I'm interested to see how JB Holmes is received.
Well, let's talk about JB Holmes because he is your leader. He's 13 under par. He has a one shot lead over Wyndham Clark. Mark, JB has not had a top 10 since his win nearly a year ago. We're coming up on the anniversary of his Genesis Open win. He's not notched a top 10 since then. I'm looking through his results. I see a lot of MCs. I see a lot of WDs in there, a lot of crooked numbers. But he is your leader after 36 holes, and he lost strokes on approach in his previous six starts. Currently third in the field. It's amazing what hitting your irons well can do.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I think those numbers sort of belie what he did last week at Torrey Pines in Farmers Insurance Open, because he was in the third to last group, I believe it was. He was a part of the mix, but for a late bogey or two there coming down the stretch. So he was part of the thing. He was battling with a golf swing there. He's got a pretty sort of upper body dominant sort of an action. He's a big burly sort of a guy. And last week I had him, he and Branson Etiker's group in the final round there. And he was out in front of a few balls and missed a few irons. And it was sort of indicative of who he was. He didn't play very well, in Maui at the Century Tournament of Champions there. But, you know, you could see he was close. And I watched him in practice here on Wednesday, and he had his coach Matt Killen out, and he was certainly driving the golf ball well. He's putting it beautifully on these greens. But you could see there was a little bit of momentum that he gained last week in San Diego. And the PGA Tour, I've long maintained, it's a momentum place. If a guy's playing well, watch, because he'll play well for a while. And if he gets to a course where he's comfortable, hey, JB's won you twice, he'll play well. And so there's sort of conspiring circumstances really for Holmes to be playing so well. It doesn't really surprise me. This golf course lets you drive the golf ball. And if you're driving it well, which he is, it makes the iron game a little easier. So, you know, he found some form last week. He's kicking this on. He's comfortable at the place. He's putting it beautifully. So, I mean, right now, everything's boding well for him. But, you know, last week he was in contention, didn't finish so well. So we'll see how he does.
Yeah, this is JB Holmes' season. I mean, he's had success at the Genesis in the past. He's had success, obviously, here at the Waste Management with a win. He's had success at the Farmers. This is like the four-week stretch of every year we get some pretty good JB Holmes golf. So back to you, Greg. This is going to be the sixth time that JB has led or co-led after 36 holes. He's only converted on one of them. Of course, the 2008 Waste Management, right back to kind of where it all started for him. What does he have to do over the course of the next 2 days to wrap this thing up?
He's got to keep doing exactly what he's doing. I mean, if you go through the statistics, and since Kyle's not here, I'll take over in the game category, right? So my breakdown, when I get through two rounds of golf and I'm analyzing the play, I like to look for guys who did something extraordinarily well, or guys who are just kind of doing what they do. And when I look at JB Holmes after round one, he did some things extraordinarily well. And he had to, because he had to recoup from a double bogey, right? So he gains nearly, you know, over 3.5 shots strokes gain putting. He gains over 4 strokes gain approach the green, two areas that are very important. Today, he answers with a 65. A strokes gain approach the green, only 0.3 in the positive, and strokes gain putting, under one and positive, which is still very good, but it's nothing extraordinary. So for JB right now, he needs to just continue kind of with this play that he had today. Drive it well, as Mark mentioned earlier. He's got to keep swinging well. He's got to keep giving himself good looks for birdie. But I don't see a player who has just been extremely hot with the putter for 2 days, and it's uncharacteristic. I don't see a player who is just kind of on this crazy hot streak. This is kind of something that I think is sustainable and repeatable. He's well-rounded from a statistics standpoint, and as you mentioned earlier, he's won here before. He's closed the deal. This is the time of year where he plays really well. This is the season for him, and I see no reason why JB Holmes can't close the deal. I mean, now, that being said, he's only closed one out of six 36 hole leads. Well, it's hard to close 36 hole leads. It doesn't happen very often. Not a lot of guys do it. And if they do it, it's not at a very high rate, right? This isn't Tiger Woods. We're not expecting him to be Tiger Woods. But I will say I expect J.B. Holmes to be in contention. I think he'll be able to handle everything that comes his way tomorrow.
Rick, if I can add something to that, this golf course, you got to get busy on the par fives. There are a few par fours you got to navigate. I think of five, I think of eight, I think of 11 and 14. They're sort of the real beef of the golf course. But you got to get off the par fives, and he's played those par fives five under for the week thus far, and then he's four under on the par threes. So if he maintains that clip, he's knocked over, basically almost a half of the round of golf. Playing pretty well. The par threes, there's some of that are difficult. We've documented 16. I think 12 is a great hole. Four is no pushover. And then of course 7 is a difficult one. So he's dealing with kind of the personality of the golf course, in my opinion, well. And so if you can get the fives and play the threes well, you're well on your way. So if he continues in that vein, you're going to pick up one or two more bonuses along the line. So, you know, that quickly adds up to 67 or 6, which is 4 or 5 under. You know, you do that a few times and you're suddenly in the 20s. And so then he'll be a tough challenge then.
The immediate chasers of J.B. Holmes is a couple of guys with not necessarily the strongest resumes on tour. Wyndham Clark, one shot back. He's currently ranked 178th in the world. We all do know Billy Horschel, who is currently two shots back. He's the 40th ranked player in the world, former FedEx Cup champion. Scott Piercy, who is, you know, he has a great long PGA Tour resume. He's been around for a long time, currently ranked 116th in the world. And then Benyon, also three shots back. Mark, of these guys who are just kind of lurking behind, who aren't raising trophies once or twice a year or anything like that, is there anybody from this group that you think can really pop up, play well over the weekend, and become a contender?
Well, I want to say Ben Arn, because I was disappointed from a one-and-done perspective early in the year when it comes through. But I'm smarting at all. I mean, this is – okay, well, I'll let my scar tissue go. But you know – Billy has proven that he can win. He's proven he can win under pressure. It's been a lean time of it for him, but he's an emotional sort, and he can really get up because this is an emotional event. And this sort of stuff gets a guy like a Billy Horschel going. So, you know, I don't think he's going to go away, but you got to, and Wyndham Clark is playing beautifully. And I must acknowledge him because he's a stout young player. He's strong. He's got a great instructor in Boyd Summerays. In fact, he's moved close to Boyd and Tony Finau, and he's sort of, you know, gotten into Tony Finau's slipstream a little bit just to sort of gain a bit of knowledge and a bit of experience from that situation. But this is the kind of place, fresh greens tomorrow. There's a score out there to be had. We saw Clark shoot 61, and we saw Webb Simpson shoot 63 today. I feel like, you know, some of these big hitters back in the pack, sort of the 6, 7, 8 range. You know, you get out and do something special tomorrow morning, you put some pressure to run, and all of a sudden it's a shootout come Sunday. So it's hard to say now Friday night. But I don't think the event's just over for a Xander or a Rahm or Webb or one of those sorts of guys that are just a little further adrift.
No, and what we've seen from this tournament is even on Sunday, guys have flown up the leaderboard, gotten themselves into a playoff. I think Brandon Grace last year started like 7 shots back on Sunday or something crazy. So there are some low numbers out there. Greg, there are guys who are going to charge up the leaderboard. We're talking Friday night. We're trying to figure this out. I'm a little bit partial to Benyon, Greg, who is a great tee to green player, notoriously bad putter, but he's gaining, 2.3 strokes on the greens this week. You and I had a very, animated conversation about him on Tuesday on the preview show. I think he's the guy I like in this pack. What say you?
Benyon is extremely attractive when you look at this specific group of players. He's a guy that we know. He's a guy we saw play very, very well in the President's Cup. But there's a lot of volatility with Benyon that concerns me a little bit. He is certainly an impressive player, a very good TV green player. I love watching him hit the golf ball. But there's just been there's that kind of big number risk with Benyon that frightens me a little bit. Not to say that that's going to prevent him from getting the job done, as he's played this week with no bogeys. So that's pretty good so far, but is that eight that bit Mark a couple weeks ago at the American Express, is that looming somewhere in the distance, or has he figured something out? Benon, I think, to me, has a lot of questions to answer, and if he can get it done this week, I think Benon will be on his way to a phenomenal season. But if these hiccups continue, then I think we might see a little bit, you know, the questions will continue for Benon. Wyndham Clark is a guy that really has my interest for a number of reasons. He reminds me a little bit of an Andrew Landry in when you look at his results performance. He's a guy who's extremely talented. He hits the ball a long way. He's a wonderful putter throughout his career. He's very inconsistent. He too has some great volatility. He's kind of a miss cut or get a top 10 kind of a guy. And I think when he's playing well like this, he's a guy that can really ride his confidence. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Wyndham Clark break through. So very interested by, and I mean, Benon really has my interest, but Benon and Wyndham Clark are the two guys in that group for me.
Hey, Wyndham Clark has a new putter in the bag this week. Completely different model to what he was using coming in here. He wielded that thing like a magic wand in round one, but today it wasn't so sharp. And just to him, he hung around because he got off to a rough start, but he finished the round well. And I feel like that, to your point, Greg, is going to help him just with a little extra, you know, going into the weekend.
When you look at that, a guy goes out and shoots 61 and then follows it up with a 69 that's just not quite sharp. Do you think that's kind of the old, it's hard to follow a career low, it's hard to follow a good round with another? Or do you think the round today is just the bad round of the tournament?
Nah, you know what? My opinion always is that the 61 or 2 or 3 or 4 is 5 even is the outlier. You know, you look, I'm a big one to gravitate back to stroke average. And if the dude's stroke average is 70, if he shot 62 in round one, he's going to find his way back to 70 eventually. So I think it was just a normalization a little bit today. But what he did in that normalization, and he referenced this, he didn't let it get to him mentally. You know, because you start revisiting what I was and where I was and this part I made and that sort of thing. So he was very mature in his approach to the thing today. So I think 69, I'm sure if he's at dinner with whoever it is right now, he's feeling pretty good about himself.
That's exactly what he said, Mark. He gave a great interview afterwards and said, if you told me I'd be 12 under through 36 holes, I would have absolutely taken that every single time, which is a testament to exactly what you're describing. Okay, the big boys are here. Literally, basically everyone makes the cut. We don't have, Tony Finau, 4 missed cuts in a row. He makes the cut here. We had none of these big boys, none of these studs, have a letdown week and end up missing the cut. So lurking right below the tiers of guys that we just talked about, Bubba's here. Tony Finau is here. John Rahm, all 7 under par, currently 6 shots back. Webb Simpson shoots the round of the day, 63 by 2 shots. We know what Webb can do around here. Like, this is, to me, Mark, is making up, like, one of these guys is going to go out and scorch the weekend. And I think, you know, we'll have JB Holmes or whoever it is looking over their shoulder because there's so many studs, you know, 6 shots back, and they can make that up in a hurry.
Yeah, you know, a lot of me, I've done this before, wants to say there's going to be a playoff, but the broadcast doesn't want us to go extra time because it doesn't stay light for very long over here. I do not want to stay until Monday. But I think we're going to be 3, 4, 5 wide, you know, come Sunday afternoon, and someone's going to get out early and blister the place. They'll set it up for that. But there are a number of real show ponies, you know, Xander, Webb, Bubba, Finau, Rahm, that are all poised and playing well. And the thing is playing well. I mean, even Morikawa was down the list to some. And as I glance down this list, you know, JB's at 13. I would say if you, you know, the great Bob Jones said, if you're within 10 with 36 holes to play, you can still win. You know, if you go out and do something special tomorrow, you never really know what's going to happen. Because the one thing about this golf course, it just takes one tee shot that hits out of position, gets on the desert ground and gets into a cactus or something like that, and all of a sudden you're making a number. So to use Greg's term, there's a lot of volatility. And then you've got a hole in 17 that you can go make anywhere from 2 to 6. You know, 18, we've seen some movement as well. So there's a lot to play for still, and I feel like the guys sort of down the pack, they're feeling just fine about themselves right now, except for Rahm, who I thought
Yep.
I thought he was going to throttle George Savarikas on our show. I really did. I joked with George afterwards. I'm like, George, I just kept on seeing you back up as you were holding the microphone to his face. But, yep. You know, but that's just Rahm, and I think he'll bounce back tomorrow.
That was going to be my segue. The one guy who might not be feeling as well is John Rahm, who gave, to his credit, I love the honesty. I love the fact that he was fired up after this round. He said, I gave two away coming in. He bogeyed 16. He bogeyed 18, Greg. Like, this to me is the mentality of a guy who is just dying to be the number one player in the world. He's on the verge of it. He could actually, I think if everything falls right for him this week and with the results in Saudi Arabia, could end up being the number one player in the world. But Greg, I like it when my guys say, I don't care about 14th to 35th. I'm here to win.
Well, especially when that's the way that he is in everything that he does. It's not like this is a change in personality for him. This is the John Rahm that we've seen from, I guess when he was at Arizona State, right? So it's nothing new. This is who he is as an individual, and he's just playing this kind of golf right now where he shoots 67, 68. He finds himself well back on the leaderboard. First of all, he still thinks he can win. Second of all, he's not happy about the way that it went. And this is the kind of attitude I'd like to see out of a guy like Ricky Fowler, or a little bit of fire in him to kind of spark the weekend. This is the kind of thing that can get him going on a Saturday hot run. I wouldn't be surprised seeing him go off a little bit earlier than the leaders. I wouldn't be surprised to see John Rahm push the lead in a hurry. He's definitely a guy who can go out there and shoot he could shoot a 61 like we saw Wyndham Clark do earlier. That's not out of the realm of possibility for a John Rahm. And many of these show ponies, to use your term there, Mark, many of these guys are not afraid to go out there and shoot that kind of score. We remember Xander Schauffele did that to Gary Woodland at the Century Tournament of Champions. He's another guy I'm looking at this weekend saying a couple of calm 67s out of him. He's right there in the mix too.
For sure. Tomorrow is moving day. I suspect one of these guys is going to make a move. So we'll talk about how we think the weekend will wrap up. But first, let's take a break and hear a word from our partners.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back. All right, we've kind of talked about the possibility of someone jumping out from the bottom of the pack here, or the middle of the pack, or some of these studs. Mark, we've got a lot of names to choose from. I know it's Friday night. We've played 36 holes. Anything can happen, but I've got to get you on record. Is there someone specific from this range? Is it John Rahm who you think has the best chance of coming up and scaring these boys at the top?
You can't go against Rahm. He's the highest ranked player in terms of the world rankings in the field. I'm liking what I'm seeing out of Brandon Grace. You know, he played well here last year. And he seems to have ironed out the woes with the putter because it was dismal last year. Just a few weeks ago, he shot 63 in the final round in the South African Open on the European Tour to sort of beat down Louis Oosthuizen to the trophy. So he's playing with a lot of confidence at a place where he plays well. But I tell you what, man, I've got to give a nod to Xander Schauffele. This boy, he's just like a mental assassin. He was 3 over early. It just wasn't going right. And then you're watching him, and we're watching closely. He's part of our coverage, and nothing's really changed except for his score. And he just switched it on, and the guy plays the next 9 holes in 7 under par. And so all of a sudden, he's gone from just ridiculous to sublime. And it speaks to who he is mentally and emotionally. I'll never forget a conversation I was privy to when he won over at the HSBC event in Shanghai, when things weren't going so right, and all of a sudden he turns it around and wins. And he basically sucks in Tony Finau and beats him in a playoff. And the question in the airport was, well, Xander, you know, what changed? And he looked at the question asker and he goes, I don't know. I just played golf, you know, and he keeps it so gloriously simple that I think in a place like this where you can get a little wrapped up in the emotion, Xander looks like an ominous figure right now with the way he played his final 11, 12 holes or so.
Yeah, there would probably be a lot of guys who would have just, you know, pressed the eject button after being three over through five and just got the heck out of Phoenix for the week. But Xander, yeah, ho hum, goes about his day, posts a 67. All right, Greg, I'm kind of with Mark on this one. I like Xander and I really like Webb Simpson, and I'll tell you why. In the top, let's call it 16 guys on the leaderboard, those two, Webb and Xander, are the only two who have gained less than one stroke putting, meaning they're not relying on a hot putter to get them to the top of the leaderboard. They're hitting their driver well. They're hitting their irons well. And if, hey, Webb's a great putter. Xander's a great putter. If they do catch a hot putter this weekend, I think it's going to be big trouble for the field. So I like both of those guys. I like Webb a lot. How about you, Greg?
Well, this is a rare occasion, Rick, where you and I agree with one.
Apparently, apparently. I've heard that.
Yeah, let's note the time here in the Eurobowl.
Yeah. We'll mark it down on the list. I love Xander and I love Webb too. These are the two guys that I'm looking at. Here's the thing with Xander. He has this wisdom about him. It seems anyway, from the outside looking in, it seems like he just understands that a golf tournament is 72 holes, and there's going to be ebbs and flows. There's going to be highs and lows. And if there's a three bogeys and four holes, he's going to make probably three bogeys in a tournament anyway. And that all that means is that there's a 7-under streak coming in the very near future, which is exactly what we saw today. So for Xander, he's extremely calm about it, even in a round where it's extremely up and down, I guess you could say. And he just goes about his business, like you said, which is very fun to watch. And if he catches fire, he's not afraid and he will keep going. Here's the other thing about Xander that I think really benefits him. He's coming from behind again, obviously, and tied eighth at 8-under par. He's sitting at five back, many of his wins in HSBC when he caught Tony Finau, he caught Gary Woodland at the Century Tournament of Champions. Both of these victories are coming from behind, and Xander's very comfortable in the chase role. We haven't seen him do great in the lead role, but as a chaser, I love Xander. And Webb is a very similar story for me. Webb, well, not that he can't hold the lead, but when Webb is out there going and he gets it going like he did today, getting it to 8-under par, he's not afraid to make birdies in bunches, and he can do it again tomorrow. He grew up on a golf course that was like, it was a par 69. It was like 5,900 yards. It was a very short golf course. And he learned from a very young age how to go shoot a 58, right? How to go shoot really, really low scores. And when he gets into the moment and he's 6, 7, 8-under par, he's not afraid to continue to go because he's been there before. He's been there so many times. Whereas if I get out there and make four birdies in a row, I don't know. I'm uncomfortable because that's something I don't do very often. I may have done that once or twice in my life. So it's an uncomfortable situation for a Webb Simpson. He'll just keep on going. He's one of those guys that wishes there were more holes to go. He's not a guy that wishes the clubhouse would come sooner.
If I make four birdies in a month, I'm quitting golf because that's the best month ever. So we don't have to worry about that.
We're going to have to work on that.
No one told Webb Simpson that tomorrow is moving day. The guy shot up 58 spots on the leaderboard. But let's get to a quick one and done update from our little team here. So the big boss, Eric Kay, has got Xander out in front. So he's currently looking good.
Would someone wake up Eric? I mean, all these calls that he's making, we need to email him and say, look, it's early in the season. Don't start getting excited. But he's making some smart calls, yeah.
He said the summer of Xander starts right now is actually the quote that he used. So hard to argue. Producer Jacob on Bubba, that is certainly live. Mark, you've got a show pony, John Rahm. I think you're feeling pretty good about where you're at right now.
You know what? I really am. He just has a look about him. He knows he's the highest ranked player in the field. He you can see in the post round comments, he's here on a mission. You can see there's a little chip on the shoulder given the misstep in the final group last week at Torrey Pines. And I mean, today it looked like he has that ability to just turn the tables, and he made 5 birdies in a row and he made some beautiful putts, and he's playing with, you know, the lion's share of the fans behind him because he went to school down the road. So, I'm sort of liking my chances right now.
So I like him for you too. I have Gary Woodland, who I will tell you, okay, he started round one on the back
balls off the tee this afternoon.
Yeah. Well, let's go back. Round one, he starts on the back nine. So I flip on the PGA Tour live coverage. Literally at the moment he hits his approach on 11, which he holes out for an eagle. And I'm now texting producer Jacob, like, wrap it up. I've got it. It's all over. Don't worry about it, boys. Like,
a Ben on moment at the Amex. You did
it. It was over. But yeah, so he's 5 under. He's still here. And Greg, hey, he made the cut. He's made us sweat it out for a little bit. Hideki, I swear, I love Hideki. He's Hideki bot. He might need a hard reboot right now. I feel like every time he putts, it looks like it's the first time he's holding a putter.
Yeah, he really struggles on the greens. And it's something that, you know, we all know that about Hideki Matsuyama. Yeah. He's just not a great putter. It's nothing new. And in my analysis leading into the event, I thought that the fact that Hideki was struggling with the putter and was still having recording the finishes that he's been recording, which have been pretty good with the exception of last week at Torrey Pines, I kind of thought, well, that tells you that he's probably hitting it pretty well. And he's going to a golf course with a great course history. And sometimes getting on greens that, you know, you can kind of see the break, you can kind of get hot with the putter, which he can do. He's a hot puttering week away from winning every single week he goes out there, especially on a golf course that he likes so much like this. So I thought the fact that he was struggling with the putting leading in was actually advantageous. But today it seemed like he was just hitting it too far away from the hole. He was hitting it to, you know, 38 feet, 42 feet, 60 feet. And for Hideki, a guy that struggles in the close range specifically, when he gets inside of, you know, 4 to 8 feet in that range, he really struggles. And when you're forced to lag putt like that, you're going to leave yourself in that range sometimes. And he missed a number of those. So that's really the difficulty for him. I will say the 74 today is definitely the exception. I expect him to come out on the weekend and move his way up the leaderboard. Is he going to win? No, absolutely not. But can he work his way up into a top 15 or so, make me some money? I think he can. Let's go, Hideki. Here we go.
Okay, you strokes gain brigade.
Yeah, right. Go for it. Hit him.
Yeah, hit me hard. Here we go.
Hideki gains 1.52 strokes in the greens in round one. That's 26. He's in the top quarter of the field. He loses 3.13 today. What, was he putting with a grip of the putter? What suddenly happened overnight?
Yeah, I mean, Hideki's bad, not 3 strokes lost bad. That's...
So yeah. Does he need to go and do like a little bit of a Wyndham Clark move here and just go to a completely new style and maybe he'll shoot 61 tomorrow?
This is the conversation the group of us need to be in front of each other like Kyle and I were in Orlando. And you're a good golf instructor. Rick, you've been around the thing. I respect your opinions, Ali. Golf is a day to day thing. You know, who knows? Tomorrow, someone might get out there and miss a few putts early, and then, you know, all of a sudden that hole looks about the size of a thimble, and then there's the pressure, and then there's the mindset. It's a fickle deal. Yeah, Matsuyama did look uncomfortable today. I will concede that. But it's just the nature of the game. What he managed to do was somehow get away with limited damage to the day because he finished well. But it's just a weird sort of a deal, and we've got to be a little careful when we start to look too much data, especially in an event like this.
Yeah, I was going to say, Greg, the reason to be optimistic is the 3 strokes he lost putting, he loses, but not that bad. And then he lost another 1.2 off the tees, which is not Hideki's game. He's usually much better than that. So I think we're going to get a weekend bounce back from him. Kyle, unfortunately, Corey Connors, probably the wrong Canadian. Adam Hadwin, the top Canadian, with that baby swag. The first round back or the first tournament back from having a child. I swear everyone always top tens it. So that rounds us out for the one and done. We all have a bullet for the weekend, which is nice. But I do, before I let you guys go, I want to talk a few other quick topics just around the world of golf. One of them is here in person, or was here in person in Phoenix. Mark, he is slamming the trunk. He's flying out of here. Jordan Spieth misses the cut. I feel like every time he seems like, okay, I don't know if it was on PGA Tour Live, Mark, or if it was on the coverage. Someone said, you know, he missed a short putt. He got very frustrated. And the comment was something like, it looks like he's trying to get back to 2015 with every single swing. And I thought that was very profound. I thought that that is exactly what it looks like.
It really is. And I got to tell you, his coach Cameron McCormick was out here and they've been working hard on the range. And you know, that is telling to me because we're coming off, the off season really for Jordan. And he's had limited action. So you would think maybe you could deal with the challenges in the off season. He's had one start since, late last year at the Hero World Challenge. And that was down at Torrey Pines where he was decent early and then had a bad weekend, to sort of finish in the mid 50s or wherever he was. But then you got your coach out here at Phoenix that sort of speaks to stuff. And then I've just found out earlier this afternoon, I got a text saying the Jordan, and now I'm going to sound like the golf teacher over here, has made a change to his grip, the way he holds the golf club. And yes, something that, you know, people need to understand, especially a golfer like Jordan. He's got an idiosyncratic sort of a golf swing that's his, and things have to match up. You know, it's like if I do X, there's got to be a compensation Y to get the club to the golf ball in the appropriate situation. And he's done these things and did this stuff prolifically for a while. Then all of a sudden stuff starts going wrong. He starts making adjustments. Now all of a sudden we're in a place where he is making a change to the most fundamental element of the game, and that's your hands on the golf club. And the comment afterwards was, well, I've moved the hand 5 degrees over the club, and this is with a view to Augusta. I saw him at a number of hooks today, the last couple of rounds, where he tried to start the ball right and overturned, especially with the irons. He did drive the golf ball better by the eye test. I don't know what the strokes gain thing says. But when you suddenly, for a Spieth, start touching on the grip, this for me is like, wow. I need to wait and see what's going on because this is a pretty hectic adjustment. Because the one thing about Spieth, this boy is a wizard around the greens. I mean, he is like, his wedge game has fallen straight out of heaven. And as well, because of this weak left hand he carried, he slapped the ground with a bounce of the club. I mean, he could pitch the thing off the hood of your car if you needed to with spin. And now all of a sudden he's changed the grip that exposes the leading edge more. This is now a can of worms that I'm not so sure we're going to, it's going to be hard to deal with under pressure. So that change for me is telling, and it speaks to a situation where they're like, now, oh my goodness, we've got to do something completely different.
It is a little bit concerning. I mean, if you, before earlier when you're talking about a grip change, like there's one thing to make a grip change. There's another thing to adjust your grip, right? Back to where it was. Oh, your grip may have gotten a little bit weak over the last couple of weeks, or last week, maybe there was a shot at Torrey and the grip got out of place. Let's put it back. But a five degree change with the left hand over the club is significant. And you're right, Mark. Jordan has that kind of unique grip where he has a weak left hand and a strong right hand. And that comes from, I believe, the interlocking grip. And he's got he doesn't interlock the way Tiger does, where there's a little bit of space there. He jams the fingers together. And all of a sudden that creates a grip that opposes one another, which is very unique. Now, when you start shifting that around, if he's going to shift the left hand around, it's very likely that he shifted the right hand too, which is going to get the club face in a much more closed position. And you're right. He's going to have to make a lot of changes to compensate for that because it's no doubt going to close the club face.
Yes, what I hope, because I have had the luxury and sometimes the not luxury, I'll be nice about this, to work with golfers at the top level. And And it's like you like in today and out this afternoon. You know, hired and fired and hired and fired. Everyone talks about Jordan. I want to talk about Cameron McCormick, a fellow golf instructor, because my goodness, this has got to be a very hot seat right now. And you have got to have some serious stuff about you to look at the golden boy of American golf for a while to say, we got to change your only connection with the golf club. And that is not a comfortable place to be in. I'll tell you this after having worked with major champions and such. When you're in a place like that, it is not comfortable at all for anyone involved.
Do you think that's a Cameron decision, or do you think that's a Jordan kind of going off on his own decision?
I don't know, because you made a very, very smart observation in my opinion. You know, we don't know, because I just got the word that he changed the grip. This may have been just to where it was when he was playing well and the thing gravitated weak, because they all trend. You know, if you've been playing in conditions for a while and I'm in wind, I'm leaning left or whatever the case might be. So you're always helping the golfer to find their neutral. So maybe they're back to neutral. I don't know. I'm sort of speculating. Hopefully they are. But I got to tell you, this has got to be an uncomfortable situation for everybody involved. And Jordan's got to ask questions. He declined a press conference the one day. I think it might have been Thursday. I don't want to pile on, because I know what it feels like, and it's not nice. And I hope they find the matchup that works for him, because he's got huge desire. And like you say, to get back to your observation, Rick, it looks like he's trying to get back to 15 in just one swing.
To put a bow on this, to back up your eye test, Mark, off the tee, Jordan Spieth did gain a stroke over two rounds off the tee, which is the first time he's gained strokes off the tee going back to the Open Championship. So at least that is one positive takeaway from all of this. Okay, we've done the good, we've done the bad. Let's do a little weird here, because Harold Varner III broke a really weird PGA Tour record with 32 straight pars to start the Waste Management Open. 33 straight, because if you go back to Torrey Pines, he parred the last hole, 18, before missing the cut down there. Greg, I feel like golf sometimes is a lot like baseball. Baseball's been around for 100 years, and always new records are happening, things we've never seen before, unassisted triple plays, and like weird stuff's always happening. I feel like weird stuff's always happening in golf too. This is a new record. The previous record was 27 consecutive pars by KJ Choi.
This is a hard one for me to fathom.
It's weird.
It's a little bit interesting. I mean, you go out there and you make 32 straight pars. It's like something has to happen. I don't care how strong mentally you are. I mean, how do you take this one shot at a time? That when you make that many pars in a row, it's completely over. You got to take a chance. You got to do something to shake it up. I'm going to make a birdie, or I'm going to make a bogey, but enough's enough. What do you think, Mark?
Well, did you see what happened?
four straight coming in.
He goes birdie, bogey to finish the round.
And there you go.
Right. It went to heck in a handbasket. I mean, it was crazy. My spotter Craig, who's a legend, you know, he's on the course, he's giving me yardages and stuff. He was in the tower with me, and he kept on pointing out Harold's scorecard. And I was like, dude, why are you showing me this? We've got other folks. And then it occurred to me that this guy made all these pars in a row. And so afterwards he looks at me, goes, check how he finished. And so, I mean, to me, it's golf. It's spelled G-O-L-F, and you never know. It's like Wyndham Clark missing three cuts coming in and shooting 61. It's the craziest deal ever, and that's probably why we love it.
It's like Michael Kim missing like 18 cuts in a row, winning and missing his next 15 or whatever he did. It's just, there's something always going on in the world of golf. And halfway across the world for us, one other weird little thing happened before I let you guys go for the week. Graham McDowell over in Saudi Arabia gets put on the clock after giving an on-course interview, which I feel like is, you know, there's one growing the game, and then there's one that like doesn't really help. Like, you know, Greg, we'll start with you. This is another weird situation. I personally like those on-course interviews. You know, we get it in other sports where, you know, after the first quarter or the second quarter, basketball coaches give interviews. It's kind of cool to get these guys in the midst of a 4 or 5 hour round. I don't know if they like doing it, but I don't think they're going to continue to like doing it if they're being put on the clock afterwards.
Yeah, that's definitely going to turn some cheeks. I think it's such a hard thing to wrap your head around. Like, why was he, it's one I wish I saw. Why was he on the clock? Was it just simply the fact that he was giving the interview? Was it a totality of time, or did he, after the interview, did he, you know, back off a bunch of times, take his time more, which Graham McDowell's not really that kind of guy. And I'm sure Graham's just laughing it off, because this is a very interesting one. It's ruthless, and it's definitely, they're definitely on pace of play over there on the European Tour, which I certainly admire. But you're right. You're not doing any favors for on-course interviews. And the thing with the on-course interviews, I like, but part of it I like, but at the same time, these guys are in their competitive environment and there should be certain moments where it's okay. I don't want to say at the turn, because it's a continuous game like that, but maybe there's a time when there's a backup on the 13th tee and now you can, there's a moment where you can pop in there and ask the guy a couple questions in downtime. So I'm not really a huge fan of them when they're walking up the fairway. I don't think you really get a whole lot out of it. I don't know how much guys are really going to give you. But I don't think it really throws them off their game. So it's just it doesn't do a whole lot for me personally.
Mark, what's the process for this? Do these guys approve this before the round? Does someone just kind of grab them and say, hey, can I take 2 minutes? Like, cause I agree there is an aspect of you're in the heat of battle, you're in competition. You don't like what's the decorum for this?
Yeah, well, yes, there is. I just want to just quickly give some love to our NASCAR heroes, because these guys at 180 miles an hour are doing interviews.
Yeah.
Okay. So that puts golf into perspective. But for the guy here who has to do the on-course interview, it is awkward, but it is agreed to before the round. Okay. The player will be approached and they'll be like, okay, this is when we're sort of aiming for. I'll tell you, the guy who has to hold the microphone and ask the questions, you try not to catch a guy on an uphill hole. Okay, that's
good. Yeah.
What? And you try to make sure it's moving, because like the McDowell thing, like I've done a few of these, you catch them in where there's a hold up or on a par five where there might be a weight or whatever the case might be. But if you're going uphill and then the guy gets out of breath, that's a bad interview, because then the guy's struggling. And so then you've got to stop, and all of a sudden you fall behind, and then you behind the group in front. And John Paramore, man, I love him. I've known John Paramore for a long time. He's the head rules official in the European Tour, but this chap is militant. Okay. He was the guy who docked, the young Chinese golfer. He was like 16-year-old at the Masters the 1 year on the 17th hole. Okay, his name slips my mind. I'm having a 49-year-old moment, but that's John Paramore. He is the pace of play guy. And if you're out of position and you'll get a warning, and the next time he'll get you. I mean, he got Bryson last week, in Dubai. So I wasn't aware of this because I'm paying attention to PGA Tour golf. But when I saw the rundown and I heard you talking about it, I'm like, go John, you're doing your thing over there.
As you should be paying attention to PGA golf while you're there, for sure. I you know what, boys? I would be lying if I said I didn't have a little of my attention looking towards Miami for the Super Bowl on Sunday. Mark, let's go right back to you, because if we get that playoff that you're talking about, it's going to bleed into the Super Bowl and you're going to have some upset golf fans. What are we going to do about that?
Oh, goodness. I'm not going to go there. It's Friday night. I'm done with round two. I'm looking forward to tomorrow. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. But I have faith in the golfing gods that they're going to get us out of Phoenix in time for the big show.
All right. Fingers crossed on that. To get ready, I've been subscribing and listening to the Pick Six podcast, Fantasy Football Today. They've got me covered for everything that's going on in Miami. They've been talking props. They've been talking picks, all this good stuff. Greg, I know that earlier in the week you were on, I believe it was the Chiefs. You're a Mahomes guy. You think they've got this. You're still sticking strong with that.
I'm sticking strong with that, but boy, I've never had so much doubt in a pick in my life. I mean, I'm usually pretty confident in the guys that I pick, like Hideki Matsuyama this week. This one gives me real pause. It's so much pause that I haven't even changed my mind once. So I'm going to stick with the Chiefs, but I feel like I'm wrong here. So in a way, I'm picking the Chiefs and I'm picking the 49ers at the same time. This is a real strong opinion on my point.
Mark, do you want to get on the record with your Super Bowl pick?
Yeah, I do. I am a rabid Atlanta Falcons fan.
Yep.
And the Falcons, despite the abysmal season, did beat the 49ers.
Yes, they did.
Now, and Shanahan, love him until he left Atlanta. You know what? Patrick Mahomes is, the guy blows my mind. That team blows my mind. They are so fast. But I have a feeling they're going to win, but I'm going to go on the record saying the 49ers are going to do it just to say that the Falcons beat the Super Bowl champions. It'll make me feel better about this NFL season.
I actually love that take. That's a really good one, but I'm going to take the Chiefs. It's going to be a busy Sunday in the sports universe. We'll also be recapping all of the action from Scottsdale. The first cut will be here. So there's a lot going on. Gentlemen, I really appreciate the time today. That'll do it. This is another episode of The First Cut. You can get at Mark Immelman on Twitter. He's at Mark_Immelman. You can get at Greg on Twitter. He is at TheRealGFD. I'm at Rick Rungood, and we'll talk to you next time.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.